to the B to the T and the L. I'm telling you all, the show smells like, well, Shonda Torrey with all the mixing. That Jan Andrew, she's a vixen. Luke Burbank with all his wit. I'm telling you all, the show smells like T, B to the T and the L. T to the B to the T and the L.
And now, the only married news team in the Tri-County area, Jan and Wayne Schuyler, with special news correspondent Dr. Steve Brule.
I'm not ready. We're not ready yet.
Back to you, Steve.
Someone tell him we're live. Steve, back to you.
Steve Brule.
I'm sorry. We're not ready, Jan, Wayne. We don't have the fruit.
Well, I guess, ready or not, here we come. Boy, that intro, we got a whole buttload of new intros. Is that right, Jennifer?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
I put the request out, and the tens have answered. That was great. Who's that one from?
JC.
The rapper guy?
Yeah, the one who does it from his patrol car.
Oh, yeah. Is he a cop?
On his brakes. I'm not sure if he's security or a cop or what, but he has long brakes
and
where
he records
those? Into his Mac. Into his iMac.
That guy is great. Way to go, JC. Is he in the Northwest?
Yeah.
Cool. Sadly, I now have to ask because so much of the input we get is from people that are in far-flung places.
I know. It's always such a delight that it's actually somebody in our hometown cares about us.
Nice work, sir. This is TBTL. It's a show that's probably too beautiful to live. Well, speaking of talented listeners to the show, we've got a guy named Graham Kay, who's a fan of the show. He said he started listening to it. His girlfriend works at Vane, the hair salon, and I think he goes and like picks her up, and then he waits in the car for her. What a guy. And while he waits in the car for her, he listens to our show. And he's actually a musician in his own right. I've played his music on Music for Your Weekend. And by the way, he's going to be at the High Dive. I think
Wednesday
night he'll be at the High Dive. So if you're in the Fremont area and you want to hear some good music, go check him out there. So he sent along this email to us. I'll just read it to you. Hi Jen, whilst listening to TBTL this Saturday, my fiance.
Is he British?
Maybe. His name is very Anglo.
Yeah.
Graham. G-R-A-E-M-E. Graham says, whilst listening to TBTL this Saturday, my fiance, oh, she's been upgraded to fiance.
Wow.
Or he dropped the hairdresser and just, the other one, he went right to 11. My fiance commented that you are totally our type of lady. Meaning good, nice, not a mean bone in your body. So you're their kind of lady, Jen.
Is this the right email?
Yeah.
Okay.
Upon thinking about this, I remembered that I once had a crush on this girl who was very much like you. She was a senior in high school. I was 14 and a freshman, trying desperately to think of ways to impress her. I did what any good naive boy would do and decided to sing to her. But instead of penning my own tune, I decided to cover her favorite band, The Cure. And instead of making it my own, I did my best to sound like The Cure and tried to convince her that it was some lost Cure artifact. All right, here we've got a little bit of the audio. He's got a pretty good, I think he's kind of got the Robert Smith whine happening.
Yeah.
I mean, the I would not call this high-tech recording, but he's, you know.
But if it's a lost artifact, like if it's like,
oh,
you know
yeah.
what I mean, like an old B-side or a basement tape.
Yeah, this, yeah, it
kinda
sounds,
works.
Sounds very basement-y. Well, Graham says that, needless to say, this girl was horrified, and he never got to within 10 feet of her again. I'm sending this to you all because I feel you would have some empathy and at least appreciate the young, totally blinded by love, innocent Graham. He's way affected. Now, the thing that's bizarre about this is that he did reverse plagiarism, mm-hmm. where he actually went and created this song, this version of this song, and then tried to make her think it was The Cure. And Graham heard me talking about this last hour, and he emailed me. He said, because I was like, why would you, how does that move your case forward?
Yeah.
If you're like saying, I got this tape of Kool Moe Dee, but it's really you pretending to be Kool Moe Dee. Like, I don't know how.
Well, it's cool that you somehow got your hands on something that's rare.
Yeah. Well, he says, I thought if the girl knew it was me, I would have no chance. So I painfully tried to record the Cure song as Cure-like as possible. I think I faked a British accent. I used my kid sister's Casio keyboard to get that 80s feel. And I told her it was some lost B-side or something. I still didn't get the girl. Now, you have a picture of Graham up at the website, right?
Yeah, he wasn't going to probably get a girl at that point. You know.
Up at mynorthwest.com/TBTL.
He was working quite a look.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
What is he wearing in this picture?
He clearly had a lot of personality.
I'm amazed he's not gay. He looks like he's working on being a gay. Which is a lot of flair.
A lot of flair. A
lot of flamboyance. Mm-hmm. But no, he's happily fiancéd. Fianced.
It was an odd strategy.
It was.
You know, I think the strategy was flawed. But that's the thing, is when you're 14, it seems brilliant.
That's right. Like when I was doing the Stars of Tomorrow talent show. The Snow King Kiwanis Club. Well, the first year, what I did was I did a Shel Silverstein poem. I did two Shel Silverstein poems. I did the poem Dirty Dan. I'm Dirty Dan, the world's dirtiest man. I never have taken a shower. You mm-hmm. can't see my shirt. It's so covered with dirt in my ears. I have enough to grow flowers, et cetera, et cetera.
I remember.
And I wore like a grease monkey mechanic suit. And then underneath it, I had one of my sister's nightgowns. And I'm surprised I wasn't a gay. This is very theatrical what I was doing on my completely. This was the stuff that occurred to me to do at age 13. It didn't seem at all bizarre or embarrassing. So I did the Dirty Dan, and then I turned around and I unzipped the grease monkey thing and stepped out of it. And now I was just wearing a nightgown, and I did that poem Sick. I cannot go to school today, said little Peggy Ann McKay. I have the measles and the mumps, a gash, a rash, and purple bumps.
I think that actually sounds fantastic.
Well, I got honorable mention.
Good.
But the next year, I said, I am not going to settle for honorable mention. I'm taking it. I'm taking the top prize, which was like $200 or something. So I decide I'm going to do stand-up comedy. And I sit down to write my great stand-up comedy act, which is jokes like, boy, AM, PM, that food's really expensive. I was in there buying a pack of gum. I was going to buy more, but I only had $20 on me. And then it was some jokes about how the hot dogs are really inedible. Uh-huh. And something about Liz Taylor, something about tabloids and Liz Taylor and a goiter. Just rank amateurish comedy, right? My friend Joe Dolan says to me, hey, if you need some extra material, I have this tape of this guy. I don't think anyone's heard of his name, Stephen Wright. And he plays me the tape and I'm dying. It's so funny. So my act is, the first half of it is, yeah, you know, hey, if you need a hammer, just use one of those hot dogs from AMPM. They're about as hard as nails. And then I shift into, I had a pony. I literally started actually talking like Stephen Wright. I had a pony. He was hurt in an electrolysis accident. All of his hair was removed except his tail. Now I just rent him out to Hare Krishna birthday parties. It changed so drastically. First of all, it became actually funny. It was like the most bizarre thing to hear a 13-year-old boy saying. And in the middle of my routine, somebody yells out from the audience, is this Stephen Wright night?
Oh.
But the awesome part was that the judges did not hear that or understand it. And they were not aware of the Stephen Wright.
Did you keep going after that?
Yeah.
Were you just dying inside?
Didn't you see Gypsy? Okay, the show must go on.
Oh, okay.
Didn't you see The Greatest Show on Earth with Charlton Heston? Don't you know anything about this business of show that we're in? Yeah, so I kept going. I finished my routine, And I got second place. I won like $150.
Off stolen material.
I slept like a baby. Van, you had a run-in with something like this, right? In your, although it wasn't you.
It was not me. I was the victim of this.
Mm-hmm.
I was the victim. I was on the unknowing end.
What happened?
Judges. I was in ninth grade, and there was this boy named Ricky Becerril out there.
He's a 10. He's a strong beach 10.
Yeah. Yeah, he lived in the great city of Commerce.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, so he was in like my my science class or something, and we started talking on the phone, I guess. And so one day he calls me and he's super depressed and he's like, and he wrote poetry,
mm-hmm.
right? He was one of those guys. He kept a journal and wrote poetry. So he's like, oh man, I just wrote a new poem. Oh. And he's like, I'm so depressed. I'm so depressed. So I was like, well, geez, Ricky, what's wrong? You know, tell me, can you read me your poem? So then he read me this poem that was so deep and profound and just amazing and blew my mind about addiction and heroin. And it was just so deep. And I was like, oh my God. And then, I don't know, 2-3 years go by and I realize it's actually, I think, Lou Reed's lyrics to the Velvet Underground song, Heroin.
Does it sound anything like, I don't know just yet where I'm going, but I'm going to try for the kingdom if I can, because it makes me feel like I'm a man when you put a spike into my vein. I'll tell you, things aren't quite the same when I'm rushing on my run, and I feel just like Jesus' son, and I guess that I just don't know. I guess I just don't know.
He didn't know, and I believed that he didn't know.
Did it make you like Ricky Becerril a little bit more?
Becerril.
Whatever. It's in your past. He's dead to you. Don't you forget it.
You must
have liked him for that moment. You must have thought, wow, I really miss something about this guy.
Yeah,
he's really deep.
I mean, I thought it was so deep and it just sounded so grown up. I was like, oh my God, he is so deep and he's having these really grown up thoughts. And yeah, I guess I was kind of into him for that.
But actually, you were loving Lou Reed.
But actually, yeah, I was loving Lou Reed.
I'm pretty sure that people generally do get away with it in high school, because you, not only is your world small enough that you think no one else has heard of this, but probably the other people in your life have small worlds and they might not have.
Maybe, right. But it always catches up with you, don't you think? Like someday in your life, you were like, oh my God.
But he doesn't know that she found that out.
Right, but well, that
so
gets into
so he still feels like that worked.
That
out
gets
for
into
him.
An interesting philosophical question.
No, I actually think I did tell him because then, then I did actually date him later.
So it totally worked for him.
yeah. I mean, I did call him out on it.
That's how, but maybe that's how we met when I read you that poem I wrote called Mbop. Spread a tree, plant a flower, plant a rose. Find out which one grows. It's a secret no one knows.
How do you know the lyrics to that song?
That was an awesome
Nobody
song.
Nobody knows the lyrics to that.
That and the bowl That's, haircut.
It's a poem That's that I wrote. How else would I know it?
Wow.
Jen, you also did a version of this, but sadly it was really in what the state would consider adulthood.
Yeah. No, I was far too old for this kind of nonsense. But what happened is I was invited to a birthday party. A bunch of girls were going to celebrate a birthday party, and I was new to the group and didn't know them all very well, and was asked if I would make the cake. Which, looking back, I was like the new person. Why did I have to make the cake? But I said okay. And in my lifetime growing up, if you're asked to bring the cake, you either buy it or you make it from a box.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize that this was a group of like cooks and bakers and people that are into, you know, talking about recipes and things like that. I had no idea. So I made a Betty Crocker cake.
What's the
it.
Difference in, I mean, the powder that's in the Betty Crocker box is just, what, sugar and flour, right? So the difference between making a cake from scratch, quote unquote, or doing that, it's
no,
minimal,
there's a huge
right?
difference, because when you make a cake from scratch, it doesn't turn out as good as Betty Crocker's, no matter what. So I just made a Betty Crocker cake. I didn't think twice about it.
Yeah.
And I got there and the party happened, and then everybody started eating the cake and everyone started going crazy about the cake. Like, this is the best cake they'd ever had. And I'm thinking to myself, yeah, I know. I mean, those cake boxes are awesome. And so I'm sitting there, and then they start asking me about the ingredients, and I realize they think I made this cake. It would never occur to them, because none of them would ever make something from a box. I just all of a sudden realized I'm in a group of people that this is like heresy, what I've done. And so they're asking about it, and I just started going with it and saying, yeah, you know, well, nothing special, just, you know, eggs. And so I'm kind of going
along.
Do
you even know how you make a cake from scratch? Can you even, like, believably fake? Because I wouldn't even...
No. I mean, I know there's flour and sugar and water and eggs, so I could go with that for a while.
And you had a moment where you had to decide, right? You were at a fork in the road, and you just thought, I don't want to take this away from them.
Well, and they had all been going on and on about it, and so if I was then to say it's Betty Crocker, then their palates aren't that good.
Right.
Like, it just felt like it was going to be horrible and awkward.
You owed it to them, really.
Yeah, I did. I mean,
keep this charade going.
So then the big moment happened where it was totally silent, and one of the women said, this cake is the most moist cake I have ever tasted in my entire life. You must tell us your secret. How did you keep it so moist? And I paused for a minute, and then I said, okay. So I live in Seattle where it rains all the time, right? And it had been a particularly rainy day. And I said, well, I find that if I keep the cake on the back deck, the moisture from the air keeps it moist. And they all went, oh. And then they said, well, when did you put it out? I'm like, oh, about 3 this afternoon. It probably sat in the moisture for a couple hours. And they were just oohing and aahing.
That is such a brilliant lie. It sounds like so weird that it's possible.
So it was pretty successful. I mean, for me, that was a great night because I was the queen of making cakes. I had this incredible secret way to do it. You know, everybody.
And that just came to you just in an instant.
Yes.
You just had this thought, put it out on the back porch.
Yes.
That's really good thinking on the fly.
So, like, 2 months later, one of the women from this party called me and said, I am making my kid's birthday cake, and I can't stop thinking about that cake you made. Can you tell me exactly how you made it so moist? And so then I repeated that again.
Oh,
thank God I remembered.
My God.
Like, oh, you just put it out on your back deck all day. And she's like, oh, okay. I said, no, not on a hot day. It won't work on a hot day. It has to be a rainy day. And I'm telling you, this is, you know, 15 years ago. I'll bet you that woman is still making cakes by putting them out on her back deck.
Well, I mean, I guess the question is, did anybody get hurt in that? Those cakes are probably turning out exactly the way they would have otherwise, except she has a little trick. And she's probably passed that trick on to a bunch of other people.
Yeah, I'm sure. I mean, I'm sure it's probably on, you know, if you Google search moist cake, it's probably on there as a trick.
Give it a little zhuzh.
So I pretended a Betty Crocker was my own, and I'm pretty sure that's probably a pretty popular one. I bet a lot of people do that. The problem with it, though, is that everyone has had a Betty Crocker cake, so everyone knows a Betty Crocker cake when they taste one.
So, I don't know if I could really...
Well, I'm not saying you can differentiate between Duncan Hines and Betty Crocker, but you would know if it's homemade or if it's Betty Crocker, I promise.
Mm. Really? Mm-hmm. And you said the homemades don't actually turn out very well in your experience.
They're hard.
Well... Aside from lying about volunteering with people who have muscular dystrophy, would you feel like in your 30s you've been able to keep the large scale deception? You've been able to kind of rein that in a little bit?
I don't want to say that I have, because I certainly, you know, when it's going to work in a situation, if I'm trying to get on a flight or
there are plenty of white. I'm not talking about white lies.
Oh,
I'm talking about just like.
Stealing something as my own.
I think
I have not done that since the Betty Crocker cake. I think that was my last time.
Well, I feel like there's a scene in The Squid and the Whale, the Noah Baumbach movie, which you walked out of because it's about divorce and it's traumatized you. But where he goes to the school talent show and he plays "Hey You" by Pink Floyd. As his song, as his original composition. And of course, everyone's like loving it because all the old people, the adults, they don't know Pink Floyd. I just think that I'm sure that there's going to be a day where I'm going to get a call from Addie's school or something. They're going to, you know, I just think it's part of, it's a rite of passage.
Right.
Anyway, well, thanks, Graham K, for sending along that audio and your story. And like I said, Graham's going to be playing at the High Dive on Wednesday night, so go check him out if you can. Okay, we've got to take a break, and then when we come back after the news, it's time for Awesome Not Awesome. Don't go anywhere.
You've kept it tight. Heidi, we no longer want to hit that. Get off Milk Island.
We got more TBTL for you right now. Man, if this little cold or flu that I'm dealing with, if this has served one purpose and one purpose only, it's just to really, really help me understand the plight of you ladies with the being cold.
Well, that's great then.
I know
that needed to happen.
I know that I said it earlier in the show, but seriously, like, I don't know how you guys do this. Because right now, because I'm not feeling well, I'm at the level of internal body heat that you guys are at all the time. This is no way to live, people. Like, I'm freezing. Here's where I'm at, and this is such a classically Vanessa dilemma to find yourself in. I'm freezing in the studio here, right? I need my coat, but I left my coat in the car, and going outside means I'll have to go out where it's really cold to get my coat. So I'm going to stay here and be uncomfortable because the specter of going outside is worse. Is that more or less how you live your life, sweetie? So it's a constant, is it the state of?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I'm glad that I've been able to have this little trip down empathy lane, because I will treat it with a little bit more seriousness next time you tell me that you're super cold.
I'll go get your coat.
No, I'm not trying to get you to get my coat. But I'm just saying I feel your pains. Women of America who are constantly freezing. All right, let's do Awesome Not Awesome. Awesome. Sometimes it can be not as awesome, though.
Not awesome.
Awesome.
Not awesome, man.
Like the fact that your tattoo is burning?
Yeah, it's not so much the burning,
the itching.
But the itching. Yeah, it's really bad.
I think, Shawnee, that putting the lotion on, it's making it worse.
No, because if it gets dried out like it is now, then it starts to get itchy and kind of red. So I think tomorrow I'm going to bring my lotion here so I can do it 3 times a day instead of just 2.
Yeah, but, I mean, part of what the painful, itchy redness is that it's healing, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, I don't understand fully the whole dynamic of what's going on.
You're not a dermatologist.
No. But it's just, scabbing like it's supposed to.
Well, I'm sorry. That's not awesome. By the way, Awesome Not Awesome is a little it's a little journey through the news and the various stories, things that we've seen. We categorize this pile of stories as awesome or not awesome. If it's awesome, Sean plays this sound effect. And if it's not awesome, he plays this other one.
Come on!
That one right there is the one he plays. And that's how this segment works. First, Jen wants to give a strong awesome to seeing movies with people who have some respect for seeing movies.
Yes. We went to see Slumdog Millionaire, and it's only playing at one theater in town, the Harvard Exit, up on Capitol Hill. And we went on Sunday afternoon, and it was sold out. And halfway through the movie, I realized nobody is annoying me. Nobody is bothering me. Not one person had spoken a word. Nobody was whispering. Nobody was coughing. No one was doing anything loud. Not one person the entire film got up to go to the bathroom. It was delightful.
Wow.
I mean, those people know how to sit and watch a movie. I can't even begin to tell you. I felt like at the end that I wanted to stand up and just say, bravo.
You wanted to clap, not so much for the movie, but for the people at the movie.
I really did want to clap for the movie. I loved it. Loved it. Loved it. But I was more overwhelmed by the grace, the incredible grace shown by that theater full of 1,000 people.
Because you're someone who is very easily annoyed in the movie watching setting, right?
Yes. Yes, I do. I particularly cannot stand coughing, and I particularly cannot stand getting up.
How many coughs? Well, those things exist in diametrical opposition. Because if someone's coughing, their only choice is to get up.
Right. But those people never get up. Coughers, they'll stay and cough the whole film long. They don't care.
Your point is, if you have a cough, don't go to the movies.
And my other point is, you're a grown up. If you need to go potty, go before the movie starts.
Mm-hmm.
People who go potty during the movie infuriate me. You didn't know you were going to have to go potty after you drank that entire thing at lunch?
Well, maybe, like a lot of us men who are getting older with enlarged prostates, maybe they need some Flomax.
Or some Lisa Nowak diapers.
That's right. Because, you know, older men like me, we can't always hold it. So that's a medical situation, what you're talking about, which is
well,
really
I don't want to go
hurtful.
After people with a medical. I mean, obviously, if you have a medical condition. But none of these people do that bother me.
I've been really trying to work on this in my own life, not getting super angry at people in movies, because there are a few, because I'm the same way, but I get so worked up that I actually end up kind of ruining the movie for myself, because I become so frustrated. And that's just probably my coat.
Oh, it's very precious.
That's some gift of the Magi right mm-hmm. there. That's amazing.
It would only really be the gift of the Magi if you'd sold your back.
Well, I did. I just like bastardizing Gift of the Magi to mean anytime anyone does anything nice for anyone else. And you'll figure it out later what the other ironic, you know, like, I sold my arms to buy you that. I don't know. Give me some time. I'll figure it out. I've been trying to write this thing. I want to write something and send it to McSweeney's called other Gift of the Magi situations.
Mm-hmm.
Just like
that would be great.
Super weird ones where it's like you da da da, but then I haven't thought of any yet, or I would have an example there.
But it's a good starting point. You've got something.
It's a
there.
Strong idea, right? Don't you think?
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm glad I just put it out there on the air for tens of people to hear. Now someone else is going to beat me to the punch.
But I totally agree with you that if you give in to the frustration, then you just end up ruining the movie for yourself.
That's right.
And I totally agree with
and
that.
And there are a few movies that are like so tense and so emotionally charged that a person coughing or getting up at exactly the wrong moment really literally ruins the movie for you. But most other movies, it's like the bigger problem is me getting bent out of shape about it. Like, okay, fine, I'm watching Mannequin 2 and somebody got up. Oh, is it taking me out of this amazingly constructed world of Meshach Taylor and a mannequin that comes to life?
Well, and that's exactly why I didn't throw a gigantic fit when those women brought their babies to Mamma Mia, because it's Mamma Mia. You know, I'm not going to freak out about that.
Mm-hmm.
But all that to say, Harvard Exit audience is amazing. The Harvard Exit just in general is an amazing theater. The people there, the concessions, every little thing about it is so well done.
But let me say, the Harvard Exit is an old, old movie theater. It doesn't have all the bells and whistles.
No.
So what
it even has kind of a small screen.
The screen's a little small. The chairs are a little old. Mm-hmm. And so it's you're saying that you'd much rather watch a movie in that setting with people who are respectful than to see it in, like, the Pacific Place.
Yes.
Like I saw Quantum of Solace.
Yes.
And watch and having the dregs of society sitting behind and around me.
Exactly.
Or like when we were seeing Wanted, and there was a preview for Death Race, where the laugh line, which is this great, the joke at the end of the trailer, that there's this guy who's talking all this crap. He's like, you can't touch me, I'm too good, da 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 da. And then a car comes spinning around out of control and flattens him. But they cut right before it flattens him. But it's obvious what's going to happen. And Vanessa
hilarious.
And I said, we're sitting there, and it's like, you know, you can't touch me. Death Race. And this guy leans over to his girlfriend or wife and goes, he's dead. Whatever I can do to never ever be in the same place as those kinds of movie viewers, I'm pretty into.
Now, you told me that there's kind of a backlash starting against Slumdog.
On the
blogs or something?
No, one person, Robert Horton, who's a critic for the Everett Herald, and he does criticism on a different radio station here that we shan't mention. I just heard him in passing say that it just left him. He didn't think it was the movie of the year the way it's getting promoted, but. And I tend to agree with him on most things. What did Tom say about it?
Tom liked it a lot. He actually he had to submit something to the National Critics, his list of the best, and he actually had Danny Boyle, the director, on his list.
Well, he also loves Danny Boyle. They're like pals.
And I was saying that I was trying to decide which I liked better between Wrestler and Slumdog Millionaire, and he said that he liked Slumdog better than the Wrestler. I wasn't sure. I was still in the middle. I liked them both so much.
Yeah. So you give it a thumbs up. You give it the you give it the reverse Digstown.
Exactly.
Which is what it will always be known as now.
I hope all our listeners are adding Digstown to their Netflix queues right now. This is so worth it.
Okay, next story. I guess I don't know, actually. I don't know how I feel about this one, if this is an awesome or not awesome. New research that's going to be published this week in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences finds that dogs expect fairness when they're dealing with humans. And dogs also, apparently, can feel jealousy. Very human, emotions that we tend to identify with humans and maybe not with animals. Actually, they've based on this one test they ran. The study, they did the study in Austria. The Austrian cognitive scientists placed two dogs side by side in front of a person. Both animals could clearly see a bowl filled with delicious sausage and dark bread treats. The animals were asked to give the paw, or shake, basically. The researchers then measured the amount of times out of 30 the animals would shake under various conditions. In treat-heavy conditions, so when they were giving them lots of treats, the dogs basically shook every single time. When neither dog was given rewards, the dogs only gave their paws 20 out of 30 times. But when one animal was rewarded and the other was not, the unrewarded dog only shook 12 times and displayed considerably more agitation than in either of the other tests. So the dog that wasn't getting the sausages was way more pissed when it was just him than when neither of the dogs were getting the sausages.
See, I don't know about this because over the weekend, Mr. Knightley stole his cousin Tugboat's treat away from him and went over and ate it. And so, like an hour later, when they went out, I always give treats after they go potty outside. So they went potty and they came back in, and I only gave Tugboat a treat because Knightley had stolen Tugboat's an hour earlier. And Knightley stood there at the treat door for like a half an hour.
Until you gave him a
whining.
Treat.
And
until you
I
gave
was,
him a treat?
No.
Wow. Jennifer.
I did not, because I was being fair. And he knew perfectly well he stole that treat.
No. This is the problem. He doesn't probably think in that way. He just, at that moment, understands that you're giving Tugboat a treat and not him. But I don't think he's connecting it back to something that happened a half hour earlier. This is the whole problem they say with when you try to discipline dogs and housebreak them and you yell at them about things. 10 minutes later, they have no idea what you're even referring to. So then you just seem randomly angry.
Mm-hmm.
But the idea behind this study is that, these dogs basically have all these human type emotions.
I totally believe that.
See, this is why I don't know if it's awesome or not awesome. I feel like it's kind of cool because you want to think that your dog has this complicated emotional inner life, because it just makes you feel more connected to them, or your cat for that matter. But if they do, their life also must suck some of the time when you leave, when I used to have a dog in LA and I would leave for weeks at a time, I would just think to myself, she's a dog and she's getting her food and someone's taking her to the dog park and she doesn't really care. But if she does have all those human emotions and feels jealousy and sadness and all this stuff, then it means that your level of responsibility to this animal is huge.
Except that I had a vet who told me something that they might have made it up on the spot.
Dr. Jerkington?
No, it was a different one. That I've chosen to believe it as the gospel truth because it makes me feel better, which is that dogs don't have any reference for time. So you could be gone 2 minutes or 2 days and they don't know the difference. And first of all, that makes me feel better. But secondly, I've seen it. Like if I'm leaving for the day and I realize I forgot my cell phone and I go back in the house, he is just as excited as when I've been gone for 2 days and I come back. There's no difference.
Your dog's basically a retard.
Well, I think all dogs are that also.
Right. All right. Well, then what do we declare this?
Well, I don't think I agree with any of that study, so I'm going to say not awesome.
Come on!
Well, what if, let's just say for the sake of argument, you agree with the idea that dogs have complicated emotional feelings.
Yeah, but basing it on their handshaking, Mr. Knightley doesn't know how to shake, first of all, so I just don't put a lot of stock in handshaking.
So even though you believe the underlying idea that dogs have complicated feelings,
I don't like the method, so therefore I have to throw the whole thing out. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, that's why you have a great career as a scientist in front of you. Because you clearly shine the harsh light of logic and reason onto these matters. Mm-hmm. All right. I'm ambivalent. I don't really care. All right. Next thing. Actually, you know what? Let's do this. Let's take a break and then come back and do the next awesome, not awesome story. Because it's kind of a big announcement. Not good news if you are some way associated with the Law and Order empire. we'll tell you big shakeup at NBC.
It's bad news for Dick Wolf.
That's right. We'll talk about that in a moment when TBTL continues.
Were you a doper yourself?
A doper? You mean did I smoke marijuana?
Welcome back to TBTL here on News Talk at 97.3, Cairo FM. Coming up tomorrow morning on Seattle's Morning News, Seahawks quarterback Matt Hasselbeck will join them live at 7:45, and Bill Swartz reports live from the baseball winter meetings in Las Vegas. So why don't you start your day off right by listening to Seattle's Morning News, 5 to 9, right here on News Talk 97.3, Cairo FM. All right, we're doing awesome, not awesome, and I got to give this – I guess I got to give this a not awesome.
Come on!
For my taste, although it comes with complications, because I don't feel like what it's replacing is something I watch anyway. It's kind of choosing between two I feel not great things. A big announcement out of beautiful downtown Burbank today, as in NBC headquarters, that Jay Leno is going to have his own show that's going to be on at 10 o'clock, five nights a week. So there's going to be like a Jay Leno. Will they just let him call it the Tonight Show?
I don't think they can.
How weird is that going to be? It's like you sold your condo and then you realize that you really like the building. So then you move into an inferior unit, like two floors down, like a studio.
Well, and you're competing against, you know, scripted dramatic programming. Although when I saw that, I tried to think of what I watch at 10 o'clock, and I watch either Top Chef or Project Runway, whichever one is on Bravo on Wednesdays at 10, and I watch The Soup on Friday at 10. But other than that, I don't watch anything at 10 o'clock. So I'm not real sure what he's going to be competing against, but I would imagine there'd be scripted shows.
Well, yeah, and I guess he's going to – I don't know, because I have to say, I don't watch TV based on when stuff is on anymore. Do you have TiVo, Jen?
Yeah. I mean that it's on TiVo. I'm just trying to think of what is normally on at 10 o'clock.
But you could just TiVo whatever else if it was going head-to-head with something that you liked.
Yeah.
I mean, the idea of sitting in front of the TV at 10 o'clock thinking what's on is...
But most people do that for The Tonight Show. They watch it live at 11:30.
Right. And I think it's part of people's nighttime ritual, right? Like, the people that like that show. The reason I think it's not awesome is because I don't find that show to be very funny. And so it always baffles me that it's so much more popular than Letterman, because I just think Letterman is so great and funny. And it's just one of those classic ways in which American pop culture tastes tend to disappoint me. So now he's moving to 10 o'clock, which means all of those shows, what does NBC normally run at 10 o'clock?
I think it's some form of Law and Order every single night.
ER.
Oh, ER.
But that show's done anyway.
That's done, yeah.
What about Law and Order Small Claims Court?
<When's> Gone.
That? Oh.
Yeah.
Seriously?
Yeah. I'm not kidding.
You spilled that wax on that rug. You should not have lit that candle. That's why he's keeping part of the deposit.
That's my impression of
Law and Order Small Claims Court.
What I hope they're getting rid of is what I think is one of the worst things on television, which is Dateline, followed only by Dateline to Catch a Predator, any other Dateline programming.
No. To Catch a Predator is the most amazing television that's ever created. I have a To Catch a Predator hole in my heart because it hasn't been on in forever. Is it on in any kind of regular? You don't know because you don't
hopefully
watch it.
Hopefully they got sued and had to finally go off the air.
I have not seen that show nearly as much as I was seeing it for a while. I always look and I always hope that I'll see a new Chris Hansen opus. So that's the scoop. Jay Leno is going to have is going to have still 5 hours a week of prime time. I'm curious to see if people will flock to him in the same way at 10 o'clock, because like you said, there are actually other real choices at that time.
Well, and at the end of the day, you've done the dishes, you've done the laundry, you've put everybody to bed, it's 11:30, you get in bed and you want to watch Jay Leno. Right. I mean, I think that's the place in their mind people right. are. They're not there yet at 10 o'clock.
Yeah. Are they going to be there at 10 o'clock? I don't think so either.
Mm-mm. They're still doing stuff.
Yeah. So, I guess we'll see. I also go with Not Awesome because...
Come on!
I think Jay Leno, somewhere inside his heart, is a funny guy still. And I think being on this giant network show causes all the funny to go out of him. So I was looking forward to him not doing that anymore, because then maybe he could go back to actually being funny. But what do I know? I'm just a nighttime radio host in Seattle with one of the top 25 nighttime shows. Not to brag.